Okay then, so we'll make a start on the second half. So just to say, I'm going to talk for a little bit, so just sit however is most comfortable. You might want to save your meditation posture for later, or it's up to you. Just sit however is comfortable for you. So I'm going to give a little talk, then there'll be time for just to kind of chat and digest the material. And then if there's time, we might finish with a short meditation. We'll just see how it goes. We'll play it by ear. Okay, so, yeah, in the second half, so we're going to be looking at this teaching of the worldly winds, which is goes right back to the Buddha. 2,500 years ago, he taught this teaching. And I actually wrote this book, Sailing the Worldly Winds, which is all about it. So in a way, this is the book of the course. Although you don't have to buy it, you don't need it to do the course. I wrote the book because I loved the teaching so much, and I thought it deserved to be better known. I thought it's such a good practical teaching. It's just kind of really relevant to our times, and I thought it deserved, and it would be helpful for it to be better known. So it's something that I really love. So we're gonna base the second halves of these evenings around that teaching, Buddha's teaching, and hopefully you'll find it really stimulating, interesting, but also practically useful. Yeah. So I'm just going to give a little introduction to what worldly winds are tonight, and then in subsequent weeks we'll be looking at how we can kind of learn to work with them or respond to them more skillfully, more creatively. Yeah. But in a way, tonight's just kind of simple introduction to what they actually are. Yeah. So yeah, the Buddha, it goes back to the Buddha, and he taught his teaching of the worldly winds, although in his time they were called the Lokadhammas. That's a kind of Pali word. Pali is a kind of ancient Indian language, the Lokadhammas. And literally that means something like, well, Loka is world, and Dhammas means something like the things or the conditions. Yeah? So kind of literally what it means is the kind of worldly conditions, yeah? Or the kind of things that happen in the world, or something like that. Yeah? But often when they're talked about in the West, it's translated as worldly winds, which is a good translation actually, because that's exactly what they are. They're just the kind of things that blow about in the world, the kind of conditions that change. You know, one day they're blowing this way, the other day they're blowing that way. One day it's a kind of bit of a breeze, the next day it's a hurricane. It's just how life changes. And as we go through life, you know, the kind of conditions of life are always changing, they're always kind of blowing about in different directions. Sometimes it's kind of going the way we want, and sometimes not. Yeah. So this is the teaching of the worldly winds. And there's actually eight worldly winds, and they're arranged in four pairs. So four pairs of opposites. Yeah. Next week I'll bring a bit of flip chart paper, and I should have done that. But there's basically this kind of gain and loss, praise and blame, fame and infamy, and pleasure and pain. Yeah, so those are the eight worldly winds, and those four pairs. Gain and loss, praise and blame, fame and infamy, pleasure and pain. Yeah. And I suppose the idea of them being arranged in pairs is, it's like we want the ones on this side, we want to kind of gain things, we want praise, we want fame, we want pleasure, and we want to avoid the ones on the other side. Yeah? And in a way that's quite natural and understandable, but what the Buddha's teaching of the worldly winds is saying, well, you can't control the world all the time. You can't control the world all the time. Sometimes the worldly winds just blow the way that you don't want them to. And in a way then, what you've got to do is learn how to live with that, how to respond to that creatively, as it were. So yeah, these are the kind of conditions that are just blowing around in the world. And sometimes the wind blows the right way, as it were, or what we think is the right way, and sometimes it blows what we think is the wrong way. Yeah? And that's just going to happen. That's just the nature of life, the nature of change, the nature of a changing world where we can't control all the conditions that are at play. And, yeah, so sometimes we're blown about by the worldly winds, yeah? Sometimes they blow this way, and we feel pleased, and we feel, oh, that's right, things are going well, and it kind of does our confidence good, and yeah, there's a sense of kind of well-being and so on. And then they blow the other way, and we're kind of blown around by that. We think, oh, life's not fair, it's not right. We feel despondent, we lose confidence, you know. So we're kind of invested in them kind of going the right way, and when they don't, we sort of lose the initiative. We're kind of blown around by them in that kind of way. Yeah? So the Buddha's teaching, the worldly winds, is it's all about just recognizing those kind of situations, recognizing when the worldly winds are blowing about, and learning to say, okay, well, is there something I can change here? And if not, well then, you know, how can I respond to the situation, even though it's not the situation I'd like to be in? What's the kind of creative, helpful way to respond to the situation? Yeah. That's what the teaching of the worldly winds is all about. Yeah. So I'm just going to give you some examples, just to kind of give you a sense of what that means. Yeah. And so it's, in a way, it's all about being free. It's all about becoming more free. It's all about becoming the kind of person that our sense of well-being, our sense of equanimity, our sense of positivity isn't over-dependent on what's happening in the world out there. That we've got kind of inner resources, inner happiness, inner kind of resilience and buoyancy, that we're not blown around by the worldly winds. That's what we're doing. And things like meditation, as we'll see as we learn the practices, in a way, meditation is all about developing those inner qualities, that inner buoyancy, that inner resilience, becoming more emotionally robust, so that we're not blown around by the worldly winds. So anyway, to give you a few little examples, and the examples I've chosen, as you'll see, they're all from very ordinary examples from daily life. I mean, some of them are slightly embarrassing, probably. But I've deliberately chosen very ordinary examples from the minutiae of daily life, and I'll explain why I've done that in a bit. Yeah. So first of all, there's gain and loss. Yeah. So sometimes we get what we want, sometimes we lose what we want. That's just life. That just happens to us. At some point in our life, however well we live our life, sometimes we get what we want, sometimes we don't. Gain and loss, the worldly winds of gain and loss. So my little example of this from the minutiae of my daily life is it's a couple of years ago now actually, I used to live in a house in a row of terraces. Yeah. And I'd drive back from work, sometimes late at night, and because it was terraced houses, and because these days everyone owns lots of cars, parking was a real issue. You maybe you know this in Oxford, I imagine Oxford, I'm sensing it. I'm getting the parking vibes, yeah? So parking was a real issue, yeah? So what would happen was I'd be driving home and I would get, you know, to the kind of the junction of my road, I'd be turning into my road, and this little kind of thought pattern was emerging in my mind. Is there going to be a parking space? Is there going to be a parking space? And as I'm driving up my road to my house at the end, I'm starting to get a little bit tense about whether there's going to be a parking space. And this tension is exacerbated by the fact that my next door neighbours own three cars. So, you know, this is the worldly winds of gain and loss. And it would be amazing. Sometimes there would be a parking space. I'd feel totally elated. I mean, it would just be, I'd be blissed out by a patch of tarmac. Or sometimes there wouldn't be a parking space and I'd feel irritated and I'd have to, you know, watch how I felt towards my next door neighbours, and I'd have to go round into the side streets and find somewhere else and, you know, trudge around the corner. You know what it's like, yeah? So, just a totally ordinary little example, but actually, in a little way, I got blown around by the worldly winds of gain and loss. Yeah, and yeah, in a minute we'll have a chance to talk about this. And the idea of this is teaching is we notice how that might be happening all the time. I mean, I think driving is a really good example. We drive around and we either someone lets us out or they don't. Either the light goes red or it stays green. We're kind of experiencing little moments of gain and loss all the time, yeah? And in other situations as well, queues in the supermarket and, you know, all sorts of situations. So that's gain and loss, yeah? Then there's the worldly winds of praise and blame. Yeah? So some people, sometimes people like what we do and they praise us. Sometimes people don't like us, don't like what we do, and we get blamed for it. Yeah? Again, the Buddha's saying, in a world of change, in a world where you can't control everything, this is just going to happen. You know, sometimes you're going to get praise, sometimes you're going to get blame. That's just the nature of the world. Yeah, we're going to encounter all of these at some time. And kind of, yeah, in a way we know that, don't we? But still we get blown around by it. It kind of bugs us when we get blamed for something, especially if we feel it's not fair. Yeah. So my little example of praise and blame, again, in a way, a very small, ordinary example, was a story I heard of a Buddhist teacher leading a retreat. So they were leading, I think it was a weekend retreat, and it was for people new to things. And this teacher leading the retreat, she decided what she would do as a kind of practice of kind of respect to the Buddha. So every time she came in the shrine room at the start of things, she would just bow to the Buddha. I mean, that is a traditional Buddhist practice. So she would bow with respect to the Buddha. So that was what she did during the retreat. The retreat went fine. And at the end of the weekend, you know, amongst all the kind of goodbyes and people leaving, two people gave her little messages on pieces of paper. Yeah? So she kind of put them in her pocket to read later. And then when it was the right time, she pulled the first one out and read it. And it said something like, you know, dear so-and-so, thank you very much for the weekend retreat. I've really enjoyed it. It's been really inspiring. And I wanted to tell you that the thing that moved me most was watching you bow to the Buddha. It was just something about that that really inspired me, really moved me. Yeah. So she said, oh, that's great, that's nice, yeah. Put that back in the pocket. And she got the other piece of paper out, and that said, you know, dear so-and-so, thank you very much for the retreat. However, I have to say, I was really disappointed. I thought Buddhism was free of all that superstition. I really didn't like seeing you bow to the Buddha. Oh. Yeah. Put that one back in the pocket. So it's a lovely little story because it shows how we all get praise and blame. And in that story, she gets praise and blame for exactly the same thing. You know, it's like whatever you do, it's not going to please everyone. That's just the nature of life. That's just the nature of human beings. We're all different. Yeah. So that's what happens. And well, do we get blown about by that, or can we meet it in a kind of without it affecting our confidence or our attitude towards the other people or whatever it is? Yeah. So again, you know, as we go through life at work, at school, we encounter praise and blame. People like what we do or they don't like what we do. They criticise us or they praise us. Yeah, it's just part of life. Then there's fame and infamy, again, just part of life. It's kind of, and in a way this overlaps a lot with praise and blame. But I think this is more to do with, so praise and blame is to do with, you know, whether our actions are approved of or disapproved of, what we do. Fame and infamy is maybe more to do with our reputation, our kind of social standing, whether we're liked, whether we're popular. And of course we all want to be liked and be popular. In a way that's human nature, in a way it's completely understandable. It's quite, you know, we want to be part of a group and feel secure and feel liked and all that. In a way, to a certain extent, that's completely healthy and normal. But I suppose there's also something in human nature, human tendency to, well, we just really invest in a good reputation and being popular and being the centre of attention, as it were. So this is more where it gets into the worldly winds of fame and infamy. Yeah. I read a really interesting book about fame once, the whole culture of fame and the whole kind of celebrity culture, and it was kind of linking it back to human nature. And well, in a way, the fact that we've evolved out of groups where, you know, the group only survived by sticking together. You know, in a way, that's where human beings have come from. So that's why it's so kind of ingrained in us, isn't it, to want to be part of the group and be popular in the group, as it were. And in this book, it had this lovely phrase about, it said, there's something about human nature where we simultaneously, we want to stand out and we want to fit in. I mean, when I read that, it really kind of struck a chord. I really sort of recognised myself in it, actually. You want to stand out. You want people to kind of, you want to be a bit special, but you also want to fit in. Yeah, and I just think there's something really about human nature in that, but that's what we're like, you know, and it's because we've come from these kind of groups where you know, in order to kind of get status in the group, you wanted to kind of be the best at something, and yet you don't want to be too different because the group kind of doesn't like people that are too different, if you know what I mean. So, yeah. So in a way, this is where the worldly winds of fame and infamy come from. Yeah. So my little story about these worldly winds is another little ordinary story from my life. Slightly embarrassing. So I used to write this little tiny column for a local newspaper when I was in Birmingham, the Birmingham newspaper. So various faith leaders, as they were called, were invited to write little columns. So I got, because I worked at the Birmingham Buddhist Centre, I was asked to write one. They were just 300 words, like once a month or something. So anyway, I wrote this column, and I can't even remember what the issue was now, but I decided I was going to speak out about something. I was going to be a little bit controversial and a bit kind of pokey, yeah. And I thought, no, I'm just going to say what I think and you know, be a bit controversial, be a bit outspoken. So I wrote this column, you know, and sent it by email. You know, the kind of thing you press send, and it's gone. And it's really interesting watching my reactions after pressing the send button, because I did this, you know, this kind of simultaneous thing I was describing. So for a day or something, I'd be thinking, well, yeah, I hope they notice. I hope it does cause a bit of a stir. And, you know, I hope it gets a bit of reaction. And then the next day, I think, oh, I hope I haven't gone over the top, and I hope it's not going to upset anyone. I hope I'm not going to make myself unpopular. And I just kind of oscillated between these two, you know. And it was the worldly winds of fame and infamy. And then the article came out. Guess what happened? There was absolutely no comment whatsoever. I don't know if anyone even read it. You know, there's nothing whatsoever. Which, of course, was even more galling. You know, that was really irritating. So, you know, I was a little bit caught up in the worldly winds of fame and fame. I wanted to be noticed, but I didn't want to be unpopular, yeah, that kind of thing. So that's those worldly winds. And then the last one is pleasure and pain, yeah. So in a way, this is the most fundamental one. In a way, even those other ones, you could kind of chunk them down to pleasure and pain, that we want what we think is going to give us pleasure. And we don't want what we think is going to give us pain. And of course, there's nothing wrong with that. It's completely natural to want pleasure and want to avoid pain. Nothing wrong with that. But we just have to recognize that's not always possible. Yeah. As we go through life, sometimes we experience pleasure. There is a lot of pleasure in life. You know, life can be, you know, really beautiful and pleasurable, and that's fantastic. But also there is pain and displeasure and discomfort in life. That's kind of inevitable. There's illness, there's discomfort, there's just, yeah, that's just part of life, yeah? So, yeah, again, it's just kind of noticing those little examples of where the worldly winds of pleasure and pain are blowing. And if we can do something about them, fine, but if we can't, how can we respond to those creatively? What's a kind of better way to respond to them rather than getting irritated or impatient or despondent or whatever it is? Yeah, bringing a creative response. Yeah. And again, sometimes we even get blown around by just tiny little instances of this. You know, like you go to a kitchen to make a cup of tea and there's no milk. You're a bit irritated, you know. You know, you find yourself, you're looking in the cupboard desperately just in case there's a carton of UHT somewhere. You know, 5 minutes later you realise you've looked in every cupboard twice and you can't quite accept that there's not going to be any milk, you know. So just these little instances where we get blown around by the worldly winds of pleasure and pain. So those are my examples of them. Hopefully that gives you a bit of a flavour of them. And in a way, I've deliberately chosen very small, ordinary, almost petty examples. Yeah. And there's a few reasons for that. Partly because I think that's what we're encountering most of the time. You know, day to day, that's how we're going to encounter the worldly winds. It's going to be in those just small, ordinary kind of ways. But even those small things sometimes blow us around, I think. You know, we get irritated in traffic, or we feel impatient, or we feel life's not fair when we get blamed for something. Yeah? Even those small kind of instances can blow us around. So it's worth being aware of them, worth noticing them, and even that will help you respond to them differently, I think. Yeah? But another reason is, I think sometimes when the worldly winds blow really strongly, you know, which is going to happen to all of us at some point in our life, but there'll be, you know, big challenges, a big kind of hurricane, a big storm in our life. Sometimes I think that almost brings out the best in us. And we might not be able to respond perfectly to those situations, but we realise they are stormy situations. We realise we can't control everything. And almost sometimes it brings out the best in us. Yeah? Not always, but do you know what I mean? Sometimes it could kind of draw out resources that maybe we didn't even realise we had. You know, when somebody's ill and we've just got to look after them, for example. Something like that. Yeah? So sometimes those stronger worldly winds do draw out a good response from us. And sometimes it's the kind of smaller, more petty ones that kind of catch us. Do you know what I mean? It's a little kind of gust. It just kind of catches us off guard and kind of blows us about. Yeah? So that's another reason why I think it's worth looking at these kind of small, almost everyday examples. Yeah? And the last reason is that, in a way, well, in Buddhism, there's this idea of karma. I'm sure a lot of you have heard this word. And basically, what karma just means action. Yeah? And the idea of karma is that we are, the kind of person we become arises out of our actions, arises out of what we do, how we behave, how we think about things, our attitudes. Yeah? The idea of karma is that all the time, we're creating a kind of personality for ourselves. We're creating kind of tendency in which our mind and our consciousness tends to go. Yeah? And so for example, if I'm generous, if I try to be generous, it becomes a habit, it becomes a positive tendency. And the more I do that, the easier it becomes to be generous. Yeah? And actually, if you're generous, probably other people will be generous back to you. So that encourages you to be more generous. In a way, that's karma. You just naturally become a generous, a more open-hearted, generous person through behaving in that way. Do you see what I mean? Whereas if I'm a bit stingy and tight-fisted, and again, that becomes a habit. It tends to kind of get hardened and set like that. And then if I'm a bit like that, well, probably other people will be, they won't be so moved to be generous to me, so I'll experience the world as a bit stingy, and that will make me a bit more stingy. And it becomes self-perpetuating. So again, that's a kind of karmic effect here. Yeah? That we become, you know, the kind of, you know, how we act, how we think, that kind of conditions the kind of person that we become. Yeah. So Buddhism sees life as essentially creative. You know, for Buddhism, living is a kind of, it's a constant process of creation, where all the time we are creating the kind of person that we're going to become. Yeah, through how we think about things, through how we talk to people, how we behave. Everything is having an effect. Every action, large or small, is kind of adding up to the kind of person that we become and how we're going to experience the world and how other people are going to respond to us and what effect we have on the world. This is what karma is getting at. Yeah? So life is creative. We've always got the chance to kind of create something different of ourselves. Yeah? I'd like to read a quote from you. It's from this book, but it's not by me. It's by Sangharakshita, who's a Buddhist teacher, who actually founded our Buddhist movement. So he's talking about karma, and he's talking about the fact that most karma is just small, everyday things. Yeah? So here we go. A very great part of one's life is probably made up of habitual karmas, things we do over and over again, often without realizing the effect they're having on us. The action may not amount to very much. It may not take up much time. But if we do it every day, perhaps several times a day, it has its effect, like drops of water wearing away a stone. All the time we're creating karma, either forging a sort of chain which binds us, or planting seeds of future growth. Yeah. So this is idea of habitual karma. Yeah. And again, you know, linking that back to the worldly winds, the reason that I'm kind of suggesting we focus on the small everyday examples is, well, in a way, they're the kind of habitual karmas. Yeah. If I habitually get irritated when I'm in a traffic jam, that's kind of conditioning the kind of person I become. It just becomes kind of hardened into a habit. Whereas if I can learn to kind of relax in those situations and kind of let go, that changes the kind of person I become. Yeah. So it's all about the quality of engagement with everyday things. And even how we wash up, how we get on the bus to work, just the quality of how we engage things. All those things are having effect from the Buddhist point of view. Everything is significant. Even ordinary things are significant in our lives. Yeah? They affect the kind of person we become. That affects people around us, and so on. Yeah? So there you go. There's a bit about the worldly winds, what they are, why they might be a useful thing to look at. So what I'd like to suggest is we get into our groups again, or it can be a different kind of combination of people, but again, you know, twos, threes, maybe fours, and just have some time to think about, well, do you recognise the worldly winds in your life? Yeah. Can you think of examples of how you maybe get blown around by gain or loss, praise or blame, pleasure or pain, or whatever it is? Yeah. And try and think of examples of all of them. But you might notice, it might be that one pair particularly jumps out at you and you think, oh yeah, praise and blame, I really notice I get blown about by that. Yeah? So you can just notice things like that. Yeah. Does one pair seem particularly relevant to you? Do you notice examples of them in your life? Or it might be you think of a different pair. Yeah. It might be you think of some other kind of way that something in the world makes you kind of blows you backwards and forwards. Yeah. So I remember a friend of mine once, he came up with success and failure. Yeah. He realized in a lot of his life, he'd been blown around by, you know, hope for success and fear of failure. In a way, they were kind of worldly winds for him. I mean, probably you could say that's a kind of subset of gain and loss. But nevertheless, it was kind of helpful for him to sort of identify that. Yeah. So it might just be that something like that is sparked off in you. Yeah. Does that make sense? Those kind of questions. Can you kind of relate to that? Yeah. Okay. So let's have a bit of time to do that. Make sure you all get a bit of time to talk, and then we'll just see what arises out of that. Yeah. Great.